1-2-1-2, always on beat. You must have been born with two right feet. I know you've been looking for something concrete. You must have been born with two right feet. Said 1-2-1-2, always on beat. I know you've been looking for something concrete. You must have been born with two right feet. You must have been born with two right feet. Said, I love you more than your mother. More than you love yourself.
May I have this dance? Can I say something crazy? I love you. Give me one more chance, give me one more chance, give me one more. Let me stay and excite you.
With an Ohio bias, I'm so happy to welcome back Matt Trabo to the podcast. He is now a columnist for Pick and Splinter's blog. And Matt, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, myself and Jake, you know, we love the March Madness. And Jake, I know we wanted to get Matt on to get his perspective. But Matt, we want to start with the question with all the controversy going on and whatnot. And this, I don't want you to solve the whole how we pay players and the compensation system and break it down and break out the charts and whatnot. But do you think this whole thing is finally going to lead, you know, amateur athletes, if it's football, basketball, whatever, to finally getting paid?
The issue is much more glaring now when you come with these Yahoo reports, with these ESPN reports, and the ESPN one, who knows now with another Sports Illustrated report. Let's talking about the validity of that. Because of these big FBI investigations and the consequential reports, this is becoming a much bigger and more out in the open situation for men's college basketball and really college sports as a whole. While it's definitely unfair, I think it becomes so much more of an issue with maybe exponentially more problems, though, if you want to compensate these players, because finding a way to fairly go about that compensation, it seems like a near impossible task, regardless of how many people you put on a task force, if you're the NCAA, and how many years that you devote to this. I just don't see it. There's so many moving parts of something like this. I think it would cause a lot more problems because different schools, among teams with individuals, and we're talking about actual locker rooms within athletic departments. In terms of athletic departments, different teams, revenue and non-revenue within those athletic departments, non-Title IX teams, Title IX teams, when you talk about women's sports being involved in all this. And I think where it could really hurt, especially in terms of team chemistry on really just about any team you could think of, is the fact that it's going to be possibly different, and maybe fairly so, maybe unfairly, for different players. Yes, there are certain players, superstars, that put more butts in the seats, and yes, maybe they should be paid differently. So that's a big system that has to be put into all this. But what if you have a bench player that has a breakout game, he outplays the superstar of the team? And yes, that's one game, but what if it becomes something that happens every week for a stretch of the season? He's going to be wanting more money because he's outplaying, and it's a surprise at that, but he's outplaying a guy that was projected to be a better guy, maybe a bigger recruit. Not all the times do big recruits become big players in terms of the actual collegiate hardwood. I think a microcosm, as you look at every year, the bubble situation for the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of teams that become NIT 1 seeds, 2 seeds, 3 seeds, that thought, regardless of different situations with different teams, that they deserve to be on the right side of the bubble in the field of 68. And I think that's going to happen here. It's going to be so many different case-by-case basis situations where guys think they deserve more. I think it's going to be so hard to try to institute a program for this.
The best time of the year for college basketball is here. Let's talk some actual basketball. And I think it's the time that we can be excited here in the state of Ohio. Three very good teams with Xavier and Ohio State and, of course, Cincinnati. And then maybe up to as many as five teams could make the tournament from Ohio if you throw in Wright State and the MAC winner. Who should we be excited about from these Ohio teams? Who's the one that may make the big run?
Out of all those teams, I think Cincinnati probably edges out a couple of those other big-time ones just because I'm not sure Ohio State has the depth. They have more depth than expected when you look at maybe an Andrew Dockich and a Micah Potter, what they were even a month and a half ago. And then Xavier, Kyrum Cantor came over from Green Bay, little brother of the Knicks star Enes Kanter. He is really shoring up that front court to a certain degree, and it feels like every week he gets more talented and more acclimated to the system that Chris Mack runs. But they still have a lot of holes, I would say, on that front court, even though their backcourt and their wing play is so good. So because of that, I have to go Cincinnati. I mean, their only loss to a definite at-large tournament team, that's all they have. They don't have any losses against bad teams, even bubble teams. So Xavier, Florida, I mean, these are teams with Richard State and Houston in American play that are firmly in the field. And those are their only losses. There's no really bad losses. Jacob Evans, arguably the top option. Gary Clark, 8 double-doubles this year. He's putting on a little bit more weight, still kind of a wary guy in terms of a front court player. But even with how good those two guys are, I think the most important player is Jaron Cumberland. This guy is built like a linebacker, even though he plays combo guard. And he is much more fluid on the court than you would expect for a guy with shoulders that broad. And I think he is someone on both ends of the floor that Mick Cronin and his staff can really lean on. And it's not just those three guys. I mean, hulking Kyle Washington, talk about big players in terms of these Bearcats. He's taking and making more threes this year. It's just one more weapon that the Bearcats can throw at people. And then you have Kane Broom. Granted, he doesn't have as big of a role as he does now that he did in terms of Sacred Heart when he was maybe the nation's top mid-major scorer. But over the last five games, he had something like 6 points last time out. But he's really showing in a smaller role that kind of scoring clout over this last little stretch here. And, hey, this is the most important time for him to be playing maybe his best ball as a Bearcat. So there's just so many weapons in terms of both front court and back court. I think Cincinnati has the roster to maybe be the best team out of Ohio in terms of the NCAA tournament 2018.
Oof, those Bearcats fans are down there salivating at that talk there, Matt.
They still got to score the basketball, though, Matt.
Oh, yeah. I will say this, Matt, and this is an honorable mention just because it became a little bit of a story, and I wanted to just pick your brain and go back into the history of it. Do you ever remember a, like, you know, team that was almost close to under 500 or similar to Cleveland State is what I'm referring to, Cleveland State Vikings? They were 12-23 going into that last game, I believe, or something close to that, 12-25 maybe, going into that last championship game with Wright State, and had they won, they would have punched their ticket to the dance. Do you remember a team with that bad of a record making it to the dance and a good story like that?
In terms of mid-majors, none are coming to my head right now, but I know, even though I can't put names and attach that to this phenomenon, it's happened here and there. It's obviously something that doesn't happen all the time because, yes, the reason why the NIT has a rule where if you're in a smaller conference and you do not punch your ticket to the dance with an automatic bid, that you get put immediately into the NIT. But it's not usually a 10 seed like Cleveland State was in terms of the Horizon League tournament. It's usually like a 2-3, two seed, a 3 seed, a 4 seed, something like that. So somebody from that far down in that bracket for a smaller conference tournament does not happen a lot. You think of maybe Georgia, obviously, this is a power conference, with the whole thing where the Georgia Dome was hit by the hurricane and it was just an absurd weekend for the SEC. So Georgia was one of those double-digit seeds, but that's power conference. So in terms of this, I mean, it is so shocking. I mean, Oakland, that's who I picked, and then obviously Northern Kentucky, I think, was the one seed in that Horizon League tournament. But for them to get further than in Northern Kentucky and in Oakland, I mean, I know they're not going to be dancing, but that is such a testament to what that coaching staff brought at the end of the season for them to get that far in that conference tournament.
Well, they call Feldman the Builder, Jake and Matt. I mean, people had Viking fever up here. I mean, it was amazing to see. I mean, like, not since Miles McFadden have people been this excited about the Cleveland State. But you bring up Georgia. My question is, and we're just going to hit you with all the questions here, Matt, you know, like, because I'm trying to get my brackets ready and get my mind ready like Jake is too. Is the SEC for real? We know how many teams they're going to get into the tournament. I mean, I think about Auburn, Alabama. You know, they've been suffering some losses. And a down year for Kentucky, but I look at a Florida team. I mean, depending on whoever does make the tournament, are those teams for real? Can they make some noise? Just an overview of the SEC.
I think the SEC is arguably, and there's obviously a couple other conferences that are going to be up there. I mean, the ACC is always going to be there, Big 12 depth-wise, absolutely. The Big East has a lot of depth this season. But the SEC, a lot of it's because of what a surprise it was, maybe the best conference in the country this year. And that is saying something when you look at the last half decade. A lot of it was them beating up on each other, kind of like the Pac-12 is doing this season. But it's such a surprise because this is a power conference that was not getting too many teams per year over that span into the NCAA tournament, even though you have all these athletic programs that have all this money. And yes, a lot of it's football money, but still plenty of clout in terms of that monetarily. So you have a lot of the facilities that you're looking for to get big-time recruits, and a lot of times they had big-time recruits. But this year, everything was clicking. And this is even with a Kentucky down team. That should have crippled an SEC, and it would have over the past few years. But this year, you have Auburn. And, yes, there's a lot of Bruce Pearl situation going on and whether or not right after the season he's going to have some FBI issues. But because of that, they had maybe their two best guys in NBA prospects, D'Angelo Purifoy and Austin Wiley, couldn't play. And behind Bruce Brown and Jared Harper and company, they got there. It was a trickle-down to a certain degree because you have Ben Howland in Mississippi State. He's been recruiting so well there. Alabama, Arkansas. There's so many good recruits throughout that SEC, but this period, this season, they really panned out more so than when it's been happening to maybe a little bit of a lesser degree, but still happening over the past few years. I think it's a team with a conference that's going to get eight teams maybe into the dance, and they're going to have a few other teams very close, like a Georgia, like an Alabama, Mississippi State, LSU. They have so many teams, at least in the conversation. The SEC has so much clout this year. I think they are also going to relay that into playing pretty well. They've had some pretty good seasons in terms of the NCAA tournament, regardless of how many teams they get in. You look at Kentucky and Florida, and South Carolina was a massive surprise to get as far as they did the Final Four last year. So they've really been going quality over quantity in recent NCAA tournaments because they just haven't got, for a power conference, that many teams in. I think this year it's quality and quantity. I think they're for real in terms of the 2018 NCAA tournament.
Matt, we've got one of the big boy tournaments out of the way as the Big Ten prostituted themselves to Madison Square Garden. but we have the champion, obviously. Is this conference a four-team conference as far as bids?
Unfortunately, that looks like it's going to be the case because Penn State obviously gets help with the fact that they have three, quote-unquote, top 15, top 16 wins against the in-state Ohio State Buckeyes for you guys. But, yes, having three wins of that caliber, regardless of putting a name attached to it, on a resume looks very good, but the fact they're against the same team does not help. And Penn State, I think, just a factor of not being very clutch against so many ranked teams, maybe a handful and a half this season, between the non-conference slate and conference play, they had a ranked team on the ropes, whether it be Michigan State, Texas A&M, NC State, which wasn't quite ranked at the time, but maybe they're top 30 in terms of others receiving votes in the AP poll, Purdue twice. So because of that maybe non-clutch factor going on with the Penn State, they might be just on the outside looking in. Nebraska, they just did not go out and play enough good teams. And I know it does not help that the Big Ten is a little bit down this year. It's still a top five conference nationally in terms of conference RPI. A lot of other metrics. But in terms of the non-conference schedule, it just wasn't there. And I know a lot of that is because they schedule these games fairly far in advance, and they got some graduate transfers that really led the charge to a certain degree, and they just weren't aware that maybe their roster was going to be that good. So because of that, very tenuous five, possible six, so could very well see just four teams. And that's with the depth the Big Ten has showed since conference realignment happened. That is a big deal that the Big Ten could only get four teams, but it's starting to look that way.
Well, I think around our parts, Jake, and I think you agree with this one. And Rudy Giuliani is rolling over in his grave with that reference you made there for Madison Square Garden. But I think, like, we're just happy Ohio State's in the mix. Like, nobody expected this year one. I mean, we're going to get into that, which you probably postseason, Matt, we'll get you back on. But, I mean, what Chris Holtmann did to get this program where it was, I mean, they had an early exit to – the Lions, if the Lions could play Ohio State every day, they would, you know, get in the one seat. But, it's amazing what Holtmann has done with the Buckeyes.
It is something that at least gets him in the top three candidates for Coach of the Year nationally, if not number one overall. I think he'll get help with the fact that Bruce Pearl has everything against him, maybe FBI-wise. So his really good coaching performance is going to have an asterisk on it with that. So Chris Holtmann, he at least needs to be that high because look what he did in the first year. I mean, they did not have that much coming back. Yes, they had Wesson coming in, Caleb Wesson coming in. He was supposed to be a pretty big recruit, and he's certainly panned out. But they had some unique pieces and unique success stories. I mean, Andrew Dockett was a former walk-on. We talk about collegiate basketball, and this is a guy, yes, it's not a huge surprise because of his skill set that every once in a while he's going to have a big bucket offensively, but he's become a pest defensively. This is a guy that is such a gem for that staff there with the Buckeyes. Chris Holtman has done so much with, I don't want to say so little, because in Kata Bates Diop wasn't supposed to be this good, but he's still a guy that has produced plenty over his Buckeyes career. So I don't want to say he had so little and came out with so much of it, but it's definitely one of the most pleasant surprises nationally this season.
Well, we talked about it before, but the development of the point guard, Jackson, I think is the biggest step that you can just see in the short amount of time. But we can talk Buckeyes forever. Jake, I know what you want to get to. Go ahead with the next question, brother.
Well, I mean, every year it seems like a mid-major or two rises up, whether that's VCU or Butler back in the day or Wichita State. You know, the mid-majors are fun for a lot of people, and they could also be a downer if they get all the way to a big boy matchup that they can't really compete in. But I guess who are the true mid-majors with an opportunity in the team to go up against one of the big boys and potentially knock them off and make a deep run into the field of in this year's field?
If I were to go with some mid-majors that had that possible Cinderella run in them, first one is Louisiana Raging Cajuns. They beat Iowa. Yes, it's going to be kind of an uphill battle, even though they're the one seed, to get out of the Sun Belt tournament. The Sun Belt has been one of the very top mid-majors depth-wise in terms of conferences for a very long time now. And it looks like in the semifinals, he'll be going up against the preseason favorite, Texas Arlington. So that is a possible upset scenario, but I think they have what it takes. And it's going to be behind the fact that they have a lot of transfers, a few first-year guys, and one transfer that came in a couple years ago from Brigham Young. These are guys that are coming from programs that are no stranger to the NCAA tournament. So they know how to play or at least be part of a team on that big postseason stage, which is so big for a mid-major, because not a lot of guys, especially getting recruited as freshmen, into mid-major programs, have that extra form of being ready for that kind of rigors of postseason play. I mean, Jakinen Grant from Missouri, Malik Marchetti from USC, and Marcus Stroman from South Carolina, then with the BYU guy I was talking about, and Frank Bartley. These are guys that know how to play at this point in the season because of the programs they came from. So I really think the Raging Cajuns might have what it takes if they get in the dance to maybe win a game or two. Along with that, you can call me a homer because I'm from Western New York, but I also have to go with Buffalo. They brought Cincinnati, talking about Ohio teams, talking about the Ohio team that I like the most at the moment, like I was saying earlier. They brought them to the brink, and C.J. Massenburg is at the center of an offense that has so many go-to guys. I know really it's supposed to have only one go-to guy, but they had a handful of players that won Player of the Week awards in that conference there in the MAC. You look at point guard play is so big. You see so many teams that have won recently. Villanova comes to mind, Archie Diacono and Jalen Brunson, who was much younger back then. Having two big-time point guards that sometimes can play together seamlessly out in the court at the same time is so big in terms of NCAA tournament play. And they have that with Devontae Jordan and defensive stopper type that's back from injury. He had a foot fracture that took him out of a few handfuls of games. And Dante Carruthers. And on top of that, talking about transfers, they have a graduate transfer, midseason eligible. Oh, not graduate, but midseason eligible. So he missed 10 games. Wes Clark from Missouri. I've already mentioned one Missouri guy. And Jakinen Gant talking about the Raging Cajuns. This is a guy that is a dynamo scoring the basketball. Not maybe always done with volume, or a lot of times with volume rather than being efficient. But this is a guy that was a huge name at Missouri for a big program back in those days. He was third team all Mid-American Conference despite missing 10 games. That shows you what a big deal he is. And I've had to throw one quick one in there, and it's very unlikely because a lot of brackets right now have them coming in at a 16 seed. But Harvard, they have recruited so well over the past couple of years, and those guys are also playing well right now when you talk about Seth Towns, Bryce Aiken, Chris Lewis. So if they're a 16 seed, there's that possibility for the for a 16 over a 1, even though it's not super likely, but I want to throw in Harvard there as well.
Real quick follow-up on that, yes or no answer. If Buffalo were to trip up against, say, Toledo or something, do they have a shot at an at-large?
No.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I got a question about a specific team, and it's a little bit in the Northeast. Rhode Island. Matt, I know you got some info on them. I've watched them play. I found their games on the elusive CBS Sports Network, and it's a team I like to make some noise. Am I crazy with that, you know, looking at that squad?
Absolutely not. I think that's a team that went out and they scheduled well, and they played well in those games against big-time teams, ranked teams plenty, in the non-conference slate. And, yes, the Atlantic 10 is having a generationally bad year. They're a top 11 conference in conference RPI and other metrics, when usually they're looking at a top 8. So they're definitely down. So not getting a lot of help, especially in the last week where they've tripped up a little bit in terms of playing in conference. But who they played in the non-conference slate is really going to help them at this point in the year. Their issue could be, though, the fact that they have two very good bigs in the middle, and Andre Berry and Cyril Langevin, but they're only 6'8". And they play much bigger than they are, but they're only 6'8". If they go up against, just throwing out a Big Ten team because we were talking about them a second ago, or Purdue that has 2 7-footers, that could be an issue. But they have so many wily veteran guys on the perimeter. E.C. Matthews, if he can stay healthy, Jared Terrell, the list goes on. And then they have Jeff Dalton at the middle of that backcourt as one of the best assist turnover ratio guys in the country, as a very big point guard. The guy is 6'6", very long, but he's a point guard. And that is where they really kind of take advantage of maybe not having the best height up front. They have a lot of good height in their backcourt. So definitely a possibility, even with not a lot of height up front.
Matt, you know, we look every year at the intangibles and, you know, point guards and head coaches and senior experience and all these different things that you look as indicators for a team that can make a deep run and potentially win a national title. In your mind, what's the one thing you need on a team, the most important thing to make a successful run in the NCAA tournament?
I think it has to be leadership at the floor general position. I mentioned a second ago with how big it is and how teams that get very far a lot of times have two guys that fit that role and do it very well and would be starting, even if one of those guys comes off the bench, would be starting for just about every team in the country at the one spot. But I think it does not hurt as well for that player to not just play like a guy older than he is if he is a younger guy, an underclassman, which is going to happen a lot with these big-time NBA prospects that are one-and-done guys. But having that to kind of mesh together everything, kind of like a goalie in hockey or a quarterback in terms of the NFL playoffs, I think it really is a bigger deal than people expect, because you need, when every game is a season, you need someone that's going to calm everybody down. I think that really comes more times than not at the point guard position. Yes, you can't teach size, but there's been teams that have gone around not having a bunch of size in the past, and especially recently. And that's what, if Kansas goes about it and they make a run, because Udoka Azubuike got hurt, he's supposed to be back next week, but if something complicates and he's not going to be there for the NCAA tournament, and you see them still do well behind Devontae Graham and Malik Newman at the point guard spot there, then you're really going to see this theme kind of come into play here, not just in the past and recent years, a lot of success, but also in the future. I think it has to be a lot of leadership at a guard position, but most likely a point guard position.
Who's the team that has that right now? Who's the team that you would say has the best leadership at the guard position?
I could stay in the Big 12, and I'll mention just Devontae Graham in Kansas, because Devontae Graham, okay, with Frank Mason had that very recently, but also with West Virginia. And unfortunately, doesn't have as much in terms of stepping up to the plate around him, but Javon Carter. It's both ends with him. He's the best, maybe, on-ball defender in the country. This guy leads season after season over his West Virginia career nationally in steals per game. That guy needs a little bit more help, but in terms of the NCAA tournament, he might be enough to have them go on a maybe a surprise run, you could call it, because they've had some definite issues of late against the Baylor, against an Oklahoma State. So I'll stay in the Big 12. I'll go with Javon Carter and Devontae Graham.
So we're talking to Big 12. We got a question from one of our great followers, Matt, literally timely, about the, of course, college tourney and Oklahoma State, who's playing in Oklahoma right now as we speak.
would a win over Oklahoma be enough for Oklahoma State, or do they need to win the whole Big 12 tournament, do you think, to get in? And what would be their chances kind of deal is what his question basically was.
Now, Oklahoma is not the team they were maybe a month ago, or maybe probably even more recently than that, a couple weeks ago. They have hit hard times. A lot of that is Trae Young. He's still putting up huge points per game numbers, assists per game numbers, but it's turnovers and it's maybe basketball IQ in terms of when he's passing. Because of that, it won't be a huge win like it would have been, but it'd still be a win against a team probably just inside the field right now. And as a bubble team, that's really all you can ask for. I mean, bubble teams just need wins in general at this point. If you get a team against the field and you beat them, a team in the field and you beat them, I should say, that is just going to be such a big deal. And they have had a lot of success against better or upper echelon or upper rung Big 12 teams. In West Virginia, they've had that recently. And sprinkled throughout, and especially down the stretch, they've had those kind of victories against a very deep and very mighty conference in the Big 12. So because of that, and because of being able to do that, really every night in the Big 12, you're playing a big dog, because there's not that many teams. You're playing teams home and away, most likely. You're playing these teams not just once. You're learning about them, and that shows a lot of growth in terms of how far you're going to get in a season. I think Oklahoma State has definitely proven themselves, and if they win tonight, that's a huge deal, especially because of the team they're playing, and if they can just keep it rolling, that'll be obviously a huge deal.
All right, two conferences we want to get in here, and this is just a general, what matchups do you like in these champions, as we finish up championship week here, that you think are must-watch, and specifically with the Pac-12, which probably a lot of folks in our area are just tuning into now, trying to do that cram session for the NCAA tournament, as most people do, and also with the ACC. I mean, we know Virginia Tech is trying to get in there and things like that, but what's the games, and any other conference too as well, just like as people are trying to get their TV viewing going?
So the Pac-12 tournament is just riddled with bubble teams, because this, kind of like SEC in years past, this is the conference that has been beating up on each other. And because of that, it's a much deeper conference than I think a lot of people give them credit for. So you have a Utah bubble team, UCLA bubble team, because with UCLA, they had a lot of issues early on in the season. Granted, it wasn't with huge parts of the puzzle when you're talking about a Ball brother that's getting in trouble. But in terms of the other freshmen, Chris Wilkes and Jalen Hands, they have not been quite as good as the recruiting ranking would have suggested coming into the season. So Aaron Holiday and Thomas Welsh haven't got as much help as they probably expected they were going to get from their supporting cast. So UCLA, USC, there's a lot of bubble teams going on there. Another one is Washington. They play later tonight against Oregon State. Oregon State does not look that great this year when you look at their record, but they have the Thompson brothers and Trace Tinkle. They were expected to be much better than they were this season. So you're having a lot of that situation going on. Who knows? Oregon, if they get all the way to the championship game, that's a team that a couple weeks ago wasn't even looked at even near, regardless of record, even near the tournament picture. But they've been beating other bubble teams in that conference here and there. So the Pac-12 has a lot of bubble teams. So because of that, it's a very important conference tournament. And with the ACC, just because of how many teams they have, a lot of bubble teams going on there too. Syracuse, North Carolina tonight is a big deal. Notre Dame playing right now. I haven't been able to check the score in a couple of minutes. But if they're getting past Virginia Tech, oh, it's not good.
No,
that's not good for them as well,
half,
because Bonzi Colson is back, and that's the whole thing. How good are they with the return of Bonzi Colson? One of his first couple games back, he clobbered Duke, and that's obviously a very good sign for them because his record is very good when he's out there and the team's record. But they also lost to Ball State with him, Taylor Persons, out of the MAC. So you have that argument against them. Like, hey, when he was there, yes, the record's very good, but there's a couple glaring losses. They lost to Indiana as well in a down season. So that's not going to be good for their chances. Virginia Tech just recently beat Virginia. That would have been a huge win for their bubble hopes. So, yes, ACC and the Pac-12 tournament are massive because of all the bubble scenarios.
All right, Jake, you got any other specific teams you want to ask about? Because I got one left that I'm going to go to. So, my specific team, and I'm calling my shot now, Jake. I'm putting it out there early. I like the Zags to win it all. And I want to ask you, Matt, you know, I mean, this Tillian kid, I mean, the way that they're playing, I don't think anybody's seen them really play that much. I've been watching them play all year long, whenever they put the games on. I think the experience last year leads them as a team, especially if they're coming in like with a 4 seed, which is projected right now. It's crazy because I think they can then, you know, sneak up on a couple teams, get out that first weekend, and then really be prepared. Plus, they're sitting at home resting right now or practicing at Mark Few High School, showing kids what basketball really is.
With them, I think it's a big deal when it comes to the fact that they had last year a couple big NBA names that not a lot of people saw play because they didn't have huge roles in the team. They came off the bench, but those guys are now in starring roles. Talk about Rui Hachimura, Japanese product, and then Killian Tilly, a French product. These guys had small roles, and Rui Hachimura had a very small role last year. They had small roles, even though the potential and the ceiling was so high, and they're being talked about in terms of 2 years down the road, NBA drafts. But those guys are showing now that it's not all hype. It's not all potential. They're showing that they also can play at a high level in terms of collegiate basketball. And they might have not had the hugest roles on that team that got so far last year. But you know who did? The backcourt players. Silas Melson, Josh Perkins. They're going to probably be leading the charge, even though Killian Tilly is playing solo right now, in terms of that extra monster that is the NCAA tournament. It's a good mix of young guys. It's a good mix of old guys, not just old guys in terms of class standing, but in terms of veteran experience when it comes to the monster, like I said a second ago, of the NCAA tournament. Jonathan Williams might not be quite the NBA prospect that those other two guys up front for them are, but this is a guy that just takes his lunch pail and goes to work. He's a Missouri transfer, now the third Missouri transfer that I mentioned in this interview, but the guy, he did have a big role on that team last year, so he might be leading them up front because of that. They have a lot of veteran pieces and a lot of up-and-coming pieces, and that is just such a recipe for success. Josh Perkins, his recruiting class, nationally, high school-wise, was probably the best passer in the entire country. And he maybe has not had to pass quite as much and taken more of a scoring role this season, but he still has that base. And having a great passer, like I mentioned a second ago, in the NCAA tournament as a point guard is such a big deal. I mean, over my recent lifetime of watching college basketball, he's probably up there 1-2 with Kendall Marshall from North Carolina in terms of passers at the collegiate level. So having that at the middle of a lot of guys on the wing and up front that can do something at that high stage, I think Gonzaga, that's definitely not a bad pick for them maybe getting second weekend and beyond.
They destroyed Ohio State in a 5-minute period when the game was tight, you know, first half. This was early on in the season. And I mean, I didn't even know what happened. They literally went up by 15 in a blur and 4 minute span to end the first half, and I've been on them ever since then. You know what I mean? They showed me something then, so it's just a team I've been following. The last team I want to throw in there, Jake, and I think Matt's the best guy to ask, probably, you know, more than Jay Wright's dry cleaner, is Villanova, of course, Matt. You know, so give us the breakdown. We know they're going to get a number one seed. They may be a number one overall. I mean, tell us what we can expect from the Wildcats going into this tournament.
Villanova might be in my top two national title contenders with a Purdue just because of how many roles are satisfied with that roster. And I know everybody calls the unicorn Kristaps Porzingis because of how unique he is and his skill set on a basketball court, but you have a couple of those unique skill sets in their own right going on, no pun intended, with Jay Wright and Villanova. It's Mikal Bridges. This is a guy that won the physical lottery. He, as a backcourt player, has so much wingspan. It's almost crazy to look at because it doesn't look like you're looking at a human being. He has such a big wingspan. The guy looks like he can tie your shoes without bending down. And because of that, he has a lot of leeway in terms of being a good defender. He was a good defender before anything else at Villanova for that reason. But he has really molded his offensive game into many different facets, and he's firing on all cylinders in those facets at plenty of points in this season. And you have Dante DiVincenzo, who doesn't even start every game, and all the different things he can do and his versatility. I think the Big East tournament is you're going to see Jalen Brunson really take the reins. I know it's going to be tough because Trae Young has points per game and assists per game almost locked up in terms of nationally, which is such a big deal to do as a freshman. But I think he's going to take the reins on being the National Player of the Year. So one of those two unicorns, Mikal Bridges. The other one is Omari Spellman. This guy is a mountain masquerading as a man. He is massive. Granted, next year they might want him to lose a little weight, but he is so big because of that, and he shoots so well from deep. That is not a skill set or a combination of skills that you see a lot at really any level of basketball. So you mix with that the fact that they have Jalen Brunson at the center of it. And it's a guy 2 years ago had a huge role on a national title team, so he knows what's going on. So Villanova, I think, very, very good chance to win it all.
Matt, we'd be remiss if we didn't get your take on the FBI wiretap situation. I don't want you to have to spend a lot of time on it, but do you see it being impactful at all in this year's NCAA tournament? And I guess in the long run, how do you see this play out? When it first came out, everybody was worried about are some of the players going to continue to play? Are the coaches going to be fired? And I don't think we really have seen a whole lot of residual effects so far from it.
I don't think we're going to see a lot of effects negatively because of how quick all that stuff came out, or how recently it came out in terms of the timing of the tournament this year. So that was maybe good or bad in terms of when it came out. You're like, oh, I really hope this doesn't happen. Why is this happening right before the tournament? But because of that, the pieces weren't able to get in place to really take big-time players and big-time coaches out of things for a long amount of time. So hopefully, and it looks like this is going to be the case, that the 2018 NCAA tournament is not going to have a lot of problems. But shortly after, I think it could be very bad. There could be a lot of trickle-down. And from what the rumors are saying, the FBI investigations involving shoe companies and assistant coaches are what is going to be maybe the big downfall in all this. It's going to be the most glaring report of any of these. And they've been pretty glaring at certain points. And who knows if the DeAndre Ayton $100,000, you've had Sports Illustrated say that maybe that ESPN report did not have as much validity to it as it would have suggested when it was reported a little bit before the Sports Illustrated one came out. So you have that going on, but I think timeline-wise, it's not going to happen to the offseason. So fingers crossed with that. I'd rather it not come at all, but in terms of how close the 2018 NCAA tournament is and the fact that, I mean, the field could get so changed up if there are going to be a lot of suspensions for players and coaches that would come along with that. In terms of going back to the Yahoo report, so it had a lot more information going on. It happened maybe 24 hours before the ESPN one about DeAndre Ayton. It rubs me the wrong way because besides maybe a handful of instances, most of it going on was dinners. And when I think FBI, I think big-time criminals, the FBI most watch list. And sorry, a lot of these are just dinners with families and maybe tops $70. Some of that is not on the FBI. It's on the NCAA and what they constitute as wrongdoing. So a lot of this dinner stuff is on them and flights and whatnot. But I'm sorry, Chili's Riblets should not get somebody put on an FBI investigation with some of the most hardened criminals going on in the country. So I have a big problem with the national security thing going on with the FBI. And that thing is, do they really think this is national security compared to plenty of other problems going on in this country? Plus, in those FBI documents, there was a lot of sloppiness. I mean, there was misspelling names. I mean, Malik Wayans, the former Villanova player, I mean, you're the FBI. This is a big thing to put an FBI investigation tag, especially on college kids. So you make sure you have everything right. And a lot of these loan lists that they had on there did not specify whether or not the guy was in college at the time. So right when it came out, you had people saying, wow, this look is so far-reaching. I mean, Penn State, Temple, Appalachian State, you had Delaware State as well. You're like, look, you got Kendall Gray, Omar Carter, DJ Newville, LaVoy Allen. Look at how loans are getting even to these players that don't play for blue blood programs. But those guys are already out and in the professional ranks at that point. So it was just a very sloppy situation, a very sloppy investigation in terms of some of the documentation that came out. And they really shouldn't have, in terms of that first one that Yahoo reported, it really shouldn't have been something the FBI was looking at in general, if you ask me. So I have a bad taste in my mouth about all that FBI stuff in terms of that. And if it's big money stuff, it's one thing, but a lot of it is not. So not big fan of it.
So we can say it's safe to say I can go back with my original pick before Gonzaga and go with Arizona. Okay. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was worried about. I was real high on Arizona until the Trier suspension or the Trier, like, you know, situation as well. So, you know what I mean? Like, I'm still excited. Jake, I know, you know, we got a lot of basketball to watch here in the next, you know, 72 hours, Matt, and we want to get you back on just to kind of not help us fill out our brackets, but kind of help us fill out our brackets. But we want you to definitely get your information out there. We're so happy Matt Trebo joined us. And, Matt, please let people know where they can find your stuff. They got to turn their notifications on Twitter and all those good things. So drop that information for them, please.
So most of my stuff comes out on my Twitter account, at TrabsMatt, T-R-A-B-S, M-A-double-T. That's where you can find, especially this time of the year, a lot of my information. Love it.
Definitely. And he's a must-follow, and you see him tweeting at, you know, some of his friends and whatnot. They're also must-follows, so you've heard them here on our podcast as well. So, Matt, we always thank you for your time, man, and look forward to speaking to you next week when the excitement really comes after Selection Sunday.
So am I. Thanks, guys, for having me on.